Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook at www.audiblepodcast.com/MRmedia. That's Mr. Media to you. That's where you'll find more than 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/Mr. Media. So where was I before the commercial? Oh, yeah. Mr. Media is recorded live from the new media capital of the world and home of novelist James Sheehan, author of The Mayor of Lexington Avenue. Let's start that over again. James Sheehan, author of The Mayor of Lexington Avenue, St. Petersburg, Florida. Media had no reason to expect this quiet spring morning to erupt with the familiar sounds of his violent past. I'm sorry, folks. I was just seeing myself in the words of lawyer-turned-novelist Jeffrey Stevens. I inadvertently injected myself into the opening sentence of Stevens' first published book, Targets of Deception, a spy thriller I finished reading this past weekend and recommend without reservation or threat of gunshot wound to my listeners. It is a crackling wild ride with former CIA agent Jordan Sandor. Wait, did I say former? On a case he never planned to be a part of. Or did he? Stevens does a great job of maintaining suspense and mystery around Sandor and his cast of characters as the action transitions from upstate New York to Manhattan, Fort Lauderdale, Paris, and Portofino. If you like this kind of read, take a chance on Deception. Stephen, welcome. I'm sorry, Jeffrey, welcome to Mr. Media.
Well, thank you very much, and don't worry, I get that all the time. When you have two first names, you run into it always.
I just kept saying to myself, which is probably the mistake, okay, remember, Jeffrey's first name, Stephen, last name, Jeffrey, and naturally,
I get it all the time. How are you today?
I'm okay. How about yourself?
I'm good. Thanks for that lovely lead-in. I appreciate it.
Well, sure, and congratulations on, I can only say the quality of your first novel. It's, frankly, first novels are not always that good.
Thank you very much.
How did you do it?
Well, 700 rewrites and a very tough editor over at Variance by the name of Shane, who really whipped me into shape. But this went through a lot of rewrites. One of my gripes is that just because books are entertainment-type books, whether they be thrillers, romances, even romantic comedies, it doesn't give it an excuse to be poorly written. And if you look back at some great writers, I mean, Ernest Hemingway wrote adventure books. I mean, For Whom the Bell Tolls is a war story. Farewell to Arms is a war story, but they're brilliantly written. And so I at least aspire, I don't know how far I got, but I aspire to at least writing well, so that the reader doesn't have to shake his head and say, oh, God, this is awful, let's move on. And I think that helps the book to keep moving along, too.
Hmm. What kind of authors, do you enjoy? And whose kind of style did you think, I'd like to emulate that a little bit?
Well, the truth is, I didn't really ever want to emulate anyone, not since I was a teenager and read Catcher in the Rye. I mean, everybody, I guess, at that age wanted to write like J.D. Salinger, but putting him aside, I really enjoy Hemingway, I enjoy Fitzgerald, and that era of American novelists is great for me. Faulkner's a little dense, but he's a great writer. But I like things that are accessible, that people can read, that move along well. In the modern genre of thrillers, I really like Ludlum, I like John le Carré, I like Vince Flynn, and Vince Flynn, as you probably saw, was nice enough to give me a blurb for this book. He actually read it, and it's a funny story if you want to hear it, but
sure.
Steve Berry and others who read the book and who are best-selling writers, and they liked it, and they were terrific in endorsing the book and supporting me and getting this done.
Well, go ahead and tell us your Flynn story.
Well, if you ever read any Vince Flynn, he's terrific. He's got a character, Mitch Rapp, who's a very, very hard-edged kind of CIA guy. And Jordan Sandor, as you know from having read this, has sort of, more complexity, if you will, because he's got doubts and he's got reservations about the way the world is. Mitch Rapp is a refreshingly black and white guy. He's just, there are good guys and there are bad guys. But anyway, I was introduced to Vince Flynn. I met him, and I took the bold step through a friend of sending them a book and saying, would you be willing to read this? It's coming out, and we're looking for an endorsement. And so Thanksgiving, not this past one, but before, because as you know, the publishing world takes forever to get a book published, Thanksgiving, I get a call from Vince Flynn. And what he tells me is, and this is the funny story to me, was he got the book, and obviously he gets a lot of these, so he gave it to his mother, who loves to read thrillers. And she read the book and said, Vince, this is great. You've got to read this book. But he still had no time, so he gave it to his father. And his father said, this is really a good book. And so finally he read it, and he said, boy, this really is good, and he gave me the endorsement. So I owe it all to Vince Flynn's mother is the story. But he was very gracious about it, I must say, because you can imagine he gets inundated with requests.
Now, tell me a little bit about
I think that story was as funny as I did, apparently. Okay, fine. Go ahead.
No. It's a good story. There's no doubt. It's a good story. But tell me a little bit about your history writing fiction, because even this book, I understand, came out as a different title first, and then you've written some other stuff, but I think this is the only one you've had published so far.
Yeah, well, it's a little complicated, but I'll explain. First of all, like many writers, I've written forever. I wrote when I was a kid. I wrote through college. I wrote afterwards, on and off. But I had a normal career, as you say. I was an attorney, and you know, I did what I had to do, because writing is so difficult, and making a living at it is even more difficult. And some years ago, I was introduced to a gentleman in a round of golf, if you can believe it, who one of the other fellows said, you know, he's a literary agent, and Jeff is a writer. You should read his stuff. And I said, oh, God, I'm so embarrassed. Don't force the guy into that. And he said, no, I'll read it. And a relationship developed. And ultimately, he got my book published. And it was this book, but it was under a different name, because what had happened was, after they agreed to publish the book, and this is really a convoluted story, but I tell you, this gets crazy, but the publisher went bankrupt just before my book was to come out. My book was therefore tied up in a bankruptcy proceeding for a year and a half. When it finally came out of bankruptcy, all the rights were transferred to some other guy who was a terrific gentleman, but who had never published fiction. He tried to publish the book, but didn't have the background in fiction, and so he eventually gave me the rights back and said, if you can get somebody to publish this, it's a good book, go get it done. And that's when Tim Schulte at Variance picked the book up and said, boy, I really like this, we're going to take a chance, we're going to bring it out in hardcover all over again, and they changed the name to Targets of Deception, and that's how the book came out. But I've been writing forever, and I've written books in other genres. I've written murder mysteries, legal thrillers, and hopefully someday there'll all be, you know, a catalog of books coming out, and, you know, I could be sipping pina coladas on some island in the Caribbean. But in the meantime, I've been writing for a very long time, and so that's kind of the tortured history. But Targets of Deception has been really well received. It's just great. And what I've learned is that it's very difficult in this day and age to market a book, because, as you well know, being a media maven, there are some names that we all recognize, but until you get established, you know, when people go into a bookstore, it's tough for them to plunk down $20 on a writer they've never heard of. So it's been
right.
A tough blog.
So you've been pleased, I guess, by the reception now that you've finally got it out with Variance?
I've been very pleased with the reception. We're selling books. We're selling a lot of books electronically on Kindle, and you know, because that's the new wave. But obviously I'd like to sell a lot more books, so that we've already got the sequel to this written, and it's all done. I've done that, and the publisher's got it. And so it would be nice if the public were clamoring for it when it arrives, but we need to sell a few more of these first.
Well, Jordan Sander, I mean, it's a great character. And, you know, when you read something like this, you sort of wonder, well, did the guy writing it, I mean, did he just do research? Did he have a great imagination? Does he have some hidden history here of his own?
Well, it's a combination of those factors is the honest answer. What happened was, first of all, I have some experience in these things. I'll let it rest at that. And let's say, you know, I've been a lawyer for a long time, and as a sole practitioner, and there are things that I've done in places I've been. So everything in this book is absolutely authentic in that regard. The story is even based on a true story about a rogue CIA agent, and then the rest of it is sort of a fictionalized account around how they captured him, or tried to capture him and stop a terrorist plot. But The truth is, the Jordan Sandra character, I had a friend years and years ago, and we were one time in New York City, and this was like out of a movie. I was a young guy, and we were out with a bunch of other people, and we were going to party on a Saturday or Sunday evening, and he said, come on, let's stop at my apartment first, we'll have a drink. And we got to his apartment, and we got off the elevator, you know, one of these New York high-rises, and there's a guy standing at the end of the corridor in a trench coat. I'm not making this up, and the reason that's remarkable is this was like July. So who's wearing a trench coat in July in New York? But anyway, this guy's face, my friend's face, just completely changed, and he said to us, hang on for a second, I'll be right with you. Went to the end of the hall and had a conversation very quietly with this gentleman in the trench coat, and then came back and said, I really can't go out tonight, I'll see you guys later. And he sort of left town, and we didn't hear from him for a couple of weeks. So when he came back, needless to say, being a lawyer and a writer, I was extremely curious. And eventually, through numerous conversations, without divulging any state secrets, it became apparent that this fellow was a special ops person, and that every now and then he would get tapped on the shoulder to go someplace to do something. And so that became more and more interesting to me. We have remained friends through the decades that ensued. And when I created this character a few years ago, I based it largely on him. And so that's the history of Jordan Sandor and how he came to be.
Interesting. So you haven't done any of these things yourself.
Well, when you say these things, like what do
well,
you
mean? Well, the travel. I know you've done the travel, but yes. I'm saying you didn't prepare for this by carrying
like
a gun around
anybody?
Manhattan or Paris or any of that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah.
I haven't. Okay, let's just put it this way. I haven't shot anybody lately. But of course, no one has really ticked me off lately. So I'll just say that I've had my share of adventures. But this is a fictional account based on a real story about a rogue agent. There really was, by the way, the villain, as you know, which I find him to be kind of an interesting character, this Vincent Trayman, he is the guy that's absolutely based on a true character who, and I find villains fascinating because they're really so evil at the core of them. I mean, this was a guy who was a CIA agent who was entrusted with secrets of this country, who then decided he would cash them in and sell them in the Middle East, and just disappeared into Libya. And the CIA needed to get to him, but as you may be aware, it's not that simple. I mean, you can't just go marching into a foreign country and start shooting it up or looking for people. And so they needed a way to draw him out, while at the same time, as I created the story, he was spearheading yet another terrorist plot based on this gas, which is a real gas that is incredibly lethal. And so that's how the story kind of got woven.
So you have not been seen carrying heavy armor around Paris or Manhattan?
Heavy armor, no. I would never admit to carrying any kind of weaponry in Manhattan because you go directly to jail. But let's say I'm familiar. I'm familiar with the artillery.
Okay. just looking to clarify that. Did your friends and family know that you was it commonly known before the book was published that you you've been writing secretly?
Oh, it's no secret. No, my friends and family knew for a very long time. In fact, my late father was very instrumental in the development of my writing career. He told me that writers are all drunks and that you should got to go out and get a profession. And I don't want to hear that you're going to be a writer. You know, one of those kind of dads, the old school. And so I did. I mean, I did what my father said. So I went to school and I became an attorney and had a career and all of that. And, my household was not one in which they said, okay, you go ahead and you pursue your muse as a writer and whatever it takes, we'll support that effort. That was not the way it went in my household. So it was not a secret that I was writing. In fact, it was something that was wildly discouraged by my dad.
Your dad's still around?
No, he's gone many, many years. But he was not, he was sensible. I mean, his parents were immigrants, and you know, as is the American dream, every generation wants better for their children than they had it themselves. And he saw me with the opportunity to go be the first person in my extended family to go to college and all that. Here he was thinking, oh my God, he's going to go to college and come out and, you know, grow a beard and you know, smoke filterless cigarettes and sit around writing the great American novel. You know, it just made him shudder.
Well, and for the record, all writers are alcoholics. But you know,
you know something. It's I don't know if all writers are alcoholics. I don't think I'm an alcoholic, but I will tell you this: that it's an amazingly high percentage seem to be. I mean, you read about it, and their drink and always seems to factor into it, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I don't drink. I make my living as a writer, but I know that I'm in a very small minority.
You are indeed. Well, you know, P.J. O'Rourke has a great line where he says, anyone who thinks that writing is going to be enhanced by alcohol or narcotics is a fool. There are only two drugs that enhance writing, nicotine and caffeine. I thought that was a great take on it. And, of course, you try and stay away from the nicotine, which leaves you with coffee, and I'm a decaf drinker, so where am I?
Well, so now that the book is out, is there anything that you would change about it now that it's been out and it's been read? Is there anything you wish you had done differently?
Gee, that's a very good question. You know, as I say, Shane over at Variance was such a great editor, and we went through this so many times that I don't want this to sound arrogant in any way, but the truth is, no, I am really happy with the way this book turned out. I think that, you know, I'm an unknown, and I appreciate that, and when your listeners hear me, they say, well, who is this guy, and, you know, why should I go out and buy his book? But the basic money-back guarantee that we give is that if you pick up this book, you're going to enjoy it. I mean, if you don't like thrillers, well, it's probably not a book for you. But this is a well-thought-out, well-constructed book. I think it's well-written, and the feedback we've gotten on it has been almost universally positive. I mean, it really has. It's amazing in print, on the internet, and so forth. So, no, I don't think I changed anything about it. And, in fact, I liked it so much. I never thought of this, by the way, as a book for which there would be a sequel or that it would turn into a serial or a series involving this character. But when this was done, I was very excited because I got an idea for a plot from, of all people, my younger son, and I went and wrote the sequel to it. So I think if the public's interested, this is a repeatable character.
And you have already written the sequel?
Oh, yes.
So,
yeah. Yes, I have. It's done.
Okay. Can you give us a little taste of book
well,
number
sure.
two?
Well, this is obviously Targets of Deception. Targets of Opportunity, which is the tentative title for the sequel, which hopefully will be out the beginning of next year. Jordan returns, so the only thing that I'm ruining for the reader is that he doesn't get killed in Targets of Deception. Unless, of course, I fool you and the second book is all a flashback. But given that he's the hero, I presume we don't want him killed, at least not soon. What my son, who's a young man in his 20s, he had a very good idea. He said, you know, all the thrillers nowadays are about Arab terrorists, Islamic extremists. He said, why don't you go in another direction and look at some of the other countries or nations with whom we're having difficulties, such as North Korea and Venezuela? And I thought, boy, isn't that a clever idea? And imagine if I could tie together North Korea and Venezuela. And so that's what I worked on, and that's what I did. And so this next book has Jordan infiltrating North Korea and going up against the Venezuelans and the Chavez regime and trying to prevent an attack that is actually to take place on the shores of the United States. And it's really a very exciting book. It's really a very, very exciting cinematic type of story where there's a lot of movement and a lot of action.
Hmm. Now, what's going on with your law practice while you're doing this?
I don't know. I think you'd have to ask my clients. But I've been very fortunate. As I say, I've been a sole practitioner throughout my career because I wanted to be able to have time to write. And obviously, if you have responsibilities to partners and things, you can't make your own schedules easily. So I've had a very understanding and supportive bunch of clients who know I write, by the way, which I find interesting because you think, would they run for the hills? But instead, they've been incredibly supportive, and all of them bought copies of Targets of Deception, by the way. When I write very early in the morning. I mean, I'm talking about pre-dawn. And so if I spend 2 or 3 hours in the morning writing, you know, then I'm done, and it's almost like now I go to my other job. I, you know, take a shower, get ready, get dressed, and go practice law. So far I've been able to do both things.
Hmm. And do you have a specialty? I mean, is there an area that you practice in?
Yeah, I began as a trial lawyer, And that kind of wears you out after 20 years or so. And so my practice kind of evolved into a more transactional type of work where I do business deals in real estate and represent, you know, small and medium-sized companies. And it's very gratifying because it's more positive and you're really helping people. Our trial system, which is something about what I wrote the legal thriller about that's still a work in progress, our litigation system, our court system is really broken and it really needs to be fixed. And so it's kind of frustrating to be involved in that on a day-to-day basis. I don't know if you've ever been involved in a lawsuit personally, but they seem endless and endlessly expensive, and it just doesn't make any sense anymore in this country.
Well, it's all those other lawyers. It's not you.
Well, no, I got to tell you, it's me and it's every lawyer, and it's the system because, you know, it's depositions and discovery and endless court calendars and judges who are completely overworked and understaffed, and, you know, you get involved in litigation, and it goes on for 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 years. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever that this is American justice because in the English system, as you're no doubt aware, the loser pays the other side's legal fees, which has a chilling effect on this entire industry of litigation in this country. But since we don't have any such rules, unless it's there are a few statutes that provide for it in very specific cases, or you can have it as a contractual provision. But basically, anybody could sue anybody else for virtually anything with no fear of repercussion. And as a result, we have this explosion of litigation in the United States that's been way too expensive, and it's just clogged the courts.
I've really just got one other question I was curious about. If this book or the next one, let's say, were to take off, would you set aside your legal practice, or would you continue to, you know, wear two hats?
I don't know. That's a very good question. I don't know. I guess it would depend what you mean by take off. There are certain clients that I would like to believe I'll represent for the rest of my life. I mean, we just have that sort of relationship, and they rely on my judgment and my advice, and so I think that they'll remain clients forever. Obviously, the more successful the writing career becomes, the less need I would have to go out and generate new business or find new clients. So I guess in answer to your question, it would change in that way, sure.
All right. Well, I really enjoyed the book, and I wanted to tell everybody that you can find Jeffrey Stevens' new book, Targets of Deception, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it online at MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com, and you can learn more about lawyer-turned-novelist Jeffrey Stevens at his website, www.jeffrey, and that's JeffreyStephens. .com. That's one word, JeffreyStephens.com. And are you doing any book signings or appearances of that type?
We had done some. I don't have any schedule now, but there may be another few of them, and if there are, I'll let you know. I'd just like to put in, if I can, one plug. And by the way, definitely order the book through you because it's tough now to find it in bookstores because bookstores generally only stock bestsellers anymore, and we want to make this a bestseller. But there is a charitable organization I'd just like to quickly mention called the Special Operations Warriors Foundation out of Tampa, Florida. It's a 4-star charity. It's a no-nonsense, all-the-money-goes-where-it-should type of charity, and it's for the children and widows and widowers of special ops people who are injured or have fallen in battle. And, you know, we owe a world of debt to our military. Whatever your politics are, you know what we owe to the military people who are out there risking their lives for us every day, but they're unsung heroes like the real Jordan Sandors of the world. So half of the proceeds of this book that I'm earning are going to SOWF, the Special Operations Warriors Foundation in Tampa, and your listeners should know because it's really a great charity and it's sort of underpublicized. And if you go onto my website, it's mentioned there, and also what's kind of fun on my website is we have this 30 or 40 second video, which is sort of like a trailer that you would see for a movie, which gives you a taste about what the book is about, and it's kind of fun to look at that.
Very good. Well, happy to let you get the word out on that then.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. I look forward to reading the continuing adventures of Jordan Sander.
Well, thank you so much.
All right, Jeffrey. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Have a good one.
You too. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And for more interviews with your favorite novelists, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Adriana Trigiani, Dolan Perkins-Velez, Sarah Zarr, James Dashner, Richard Deutsch, Monty Schultz, Peter Gallenbach, John Darden, Stephen Gore, Sue Ann Jafarian, James Sheehan, and many more. And please take advantage of this great offer for Mr. Media Radio listeners. Go to www.audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia, it's Mr. Media, to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, that's www.audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia for your free audiobook. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. And you can follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman or facebook.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day, come spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.